Hello and welcome to the Pathways interview program, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Imagine your frustrated kindergartner calming her anger by taking a special balloon breath. And what if your seven-year-old's conversation with her heart could teach her to be proud of herself? Picture your fourth grader visualizing an ice blue pillow to cool his hot headache, or a fretful 11-year-old getting homework help from a personal wizard. These are some of the wonderful imagery tools that have been developed by our guest today. Today on Pathways, I am visiting with Dr. Charlotte Resnick, author of the new book, The Power of Your Child's Imagination: How to Transform Stress and Anxiety into Joy and Success. Charlotte is an internationally recognized child educational psychologist, an associate clinical professor of psychology at UCLA, and a compelling speaker and media personality who has inspired parents, professionals, educators, and psychologists throughout the world with her original therapeutic approach to helping children and adolescents heal themselves. She is a licensed educational psychologist and for over 20 years has maintained a successful private practice in Los Angeles. Hello, Charlotte, and welcome to Pathways.
Paul, I'm delighted to be here.
Well, let's start by asking you to please tell us how you came to write this book, The Power of Your Child's Imagination.
It came out of my work with the children both in the inner city and in wealthier areas in Los Angeles. And basically, I felt so strongly about sharing very simple tools that kids all over can use to help themselves thrive in our challenging times.
Now, there's so much stuff in this book. There's so much practical information as well as the theory behind it. I'm wondering, is this stuff that parents can really learn to do for themselves, or are they still going to need an expert like yourself?
Hopefully, they'll be able to do it for themselves, at least initially. That's my goal. That's my hope. Very simple tools, and with lots of examples I'm giving and exercises, they really should be able to do it. And if they're having, they're still having trouble with the kids over time, 2 months or 6 months or whatever they feel is too much, then of course, go see an expert. But initially, try all this, because it goes across subject, it goes across problem areas, it goes across ages. You could use it with little kids, you could use it with teenagers even. You just change your language, and you know how to speak to the kids, because whether you have a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old or 10 or 15-year-old, naturally you know how to talk to them.
Now, I picked up three things in the book that are like important factors for a kid developing in a positive way: the self-esteem, emotional self-sufficiency, and resilience. And, you know, there's been so much emphasis on self-esteem. I thought it was interesting how you point out that if not directed carefully, the emphasis on self-esteem can produce narcissism. Can you explain that?
Sure, because in fact there's some research lately that kids that just feel great about themselves, we tell them how wonderful they are, then they just become selfish. But when I think of self-esteem, it's really another kind of a definition, and it's the kind where the kids respect themselves and respect other people enough that they're responsible for their behavior. Yes, they feel good about themselves, but they need to help others.
So what kind of techniques can you possibly have to teach a child to respect others, I mean, beyond just telling them that they should?
I start with themselves. I really want kids to connect with their inner light, their inner good, their core self. And so even just doing the balloon breath, which is basically a meditation kind of breath, I use the balloon breath. It's an easy visual. Imagine there's a balloon 2 inches below your belly button. When you breathe in, the air goes out, it gets bigger, and when you breathe out, it slows down. And what that does is it connects the kids. Like one boy said, the balloon breath is the way in. It's really, it was like perfect. It was brilliant because it's simple, but it's a way in to connect them with themselves, because there's so much stuff going on outside with all the video and the IMing and texting all the time. There's so much stimulation. I really feel it's important for kids to have a balance and to connect with themselves. Sometimes, you know, I'll even take them back to when they're born, because none of us has gotten the love and attention exactly how we want it. So I'll teach kids to reparent themselves and imagine themselves being held and loved just the way they want from the time they're born until the age they are now, whatever age that is, whether it's 7 or 17. And then see themselves grow in the future, having received the love as much as they want.
Now, I know guided imagery is a huge part of what you teach, and I want to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
But before we do, I want to talk about this second factor that I mentioned, emotional self-sufficiency. Now, this is a little bit counterintuitive, at least for me, because we think, well, parenting, part of the job of parenting is to provide emotional support and sustenance for a child.
Right.
What do you mean by emotional self-sufficiency, and how do you teach a kid to do that?
With the idea that as soon as the umbilical cord is cut, we start letting the kids go. Because our job as parents is when they're 18 or 22 or whenever, is for them to be self-sufficient. So we want to do it a little bit at a time. And with a little guidance, the kids could develop the tools to take care of themselves. So I'll teach kids to check in with their heart, check in with their belly, what do their gut feelings tell them, to develop and trust their intuition. And that makes it very different how they live their lives. They start to trust themselves. We want them to, because they do have the wisdom inside.
Mm-hmm. And so can, at what age can a kid start trusting his or her heart?
We start early. Like I was mentioning earlier, there's a three-year-old even that was checking in with his belly, and his belly was saying to share at preschool, which was so sweet because it's something that his mom might have told him or the teacher, but this showed that it was important to him, that he had integrated this concept that sharing was very valuable, and it was coming from him, and it means more.
Now, you mentioned this balloon breath, and it's really reminded me a lot of Buddhist meditation technique that they call mindfulness of breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what it is, right?
It really is. It really is.
Mindfulness of the body,
yes.
Using the breath.
And being aware. And in fact, I'll even have teach kids different little mudras. And it's very helpful. Like you have the kids left hand down, right hand on top, thumbs touching, which is really a meditation mudra I had learned. But when you think about it, when you're working with kids, it keeps their hands from messing about. If you're in a group, it keeps them from touching other kids. And when they're alone, instead of like twirling their hair or touching their body, they're centered. It helps them center more.
Now, the subtitle of the book, Transforming Stress into Anxiety into Joy and Success, that sounds like quite a trick. I mean, that's almost too good to be true. Is it? I mean, is that... What, talk to that.
That's the whole idea. Because think about all the stress that kids are facing today. And the truth is, recently, the American Psychological Association just did a survey for the first time asking kids. They do this every year with adults, but they ask kind of tweens and teens, are you feeling more stressed this year than last year? They were. Like 73% were. And the funny, it's kind of sad, the parents weren't aware of it. So parents aren't aware of how much more stress kids are feeling.
How much more than what? Yeah, are they feeling more stress because they're getting a little an older age, or because of the times are changing?
Times are changing. There's just...
So they compared the same age with the same age 10 years earlier or something like that?
Well, they're comparing the kids now, how they felt the year before. Oh, and you're saying, is it because they're getting older? No,
yeah,
because
right.
It doesn't matter. It happens at every age. It's just...
I see.
It's just life is more stressful. There's more expected, more to learn in school, more pressure. I mean, think of what they're doing on the internet and everyone's the cyberbullying people are talking about, and you have like 10 kids IMing at the same time, and they sometimes could kind of gang up on each other. That's one kind of
stress. But life gets more complicated as you get older. I mean, when you're 5, you don't have any stressors.
You know, that's an interesting thought. I see five-year-olds that are very stressed because they're having trouble with friends, their parents are yelling, their parents are getting divorced, they're really shy and they don't know how to make friends. So the stresses are different, but the kids at five, a lot of them are under stress. They're not, I have a young boy whose kids are calling him freak or weird because he's not into sports, and that's at a very young age. I mean, when I see kids who are five and they have these coaches that are really putting pressure on them rather than just enjoying a sport, it kind of just is disturbing. I understand the value of team sports, and that's wonderful, but when I see the kids suffering from it, makes me wonder. So the idea is to use these very simple tools, which are basically tools to go inside and check with your own wisdom and kind of bypass your defense system, because they're fun, like bringing in an animal friend or wizard and checking with them. And then applying it to all these different life situations that might come up. One we talked about is learning to love yourself. Another is getting along with friends and siblings and parents. And then a whole gamut, even bedwetting. Kids are having so many like headaches and stomach aches. I could walk into a classroom and say, how many of you have headaches and stomach aches? Everybody's raising their hand. Or tics. I see a lot of kids with nervous tics. And kids go through that over time. Tic might come, tic might go away because of the anxiety. Eye blinking, nose twitching. Even bedwetting I'll deal with, because kids who maybe under seven, they don't worry about bedwetting so much, but after, it really bothers kids and it's a concern. So we could teach them imagination skills to work on the bedwetting.
Now, the title of your book is The Power of Your Child's Imagination. And obviously, through your work, you're proving that it is powerful and that guided imagery really makes a difference. But what does the research say about the power of a child's imagination?
You know, there's a lot of research. It started out with adults. I mean, Carl Symington, Bernie Siegel work with a lot of cancer patients. But over the last 15, 20 years, there's more with children, maybe in the health field. This last fall, there was a very nice small study with the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and Duke University looking at kids who had chronic stomach pain. And they used different imagery techniques, imagination techniques. And one of them was very nice. It was like they had them hold an imaginary stone, heat that felt like butter that melted into their hand, and they would warm the hand up, and they suggested putting the hand on the belly and imagining soothing the stomach ache, and it was very powerful. It was very nice because my ninth tool is like tapping into energy. So I thought, oh, that's very interesting. They're doing the same thing under a different umbrella. Well, the kids that listened to the CDs that these researchers recorded, they healed themselves like 73%, much better. So at the end, the kids that weren't in the control group, they gave them the CDs too. So that's stomach aches. Then there's a researcher, Ram Ambar, in the University of Syracuse at Upstate, who works with asthma. And he's found using imagery techniques or self-hypnosis techniques, reducing asthma medication, sometimes getting kids off asthma medication. There's research with Daniel Cohn at University of Minnesota with migraines and tics and encopresis. And so there's like a wide range, a lot in the medical field, but sports too. We know with adults, every single Olympic athlete has been using visualization. And Michael Phelps, remember when he won the impossible 8 gold medals? Well, I was finishing writing the book, and he said to the LA Times, he said, when everyone said it couldn't be done, all it took was a little imagination. And then recently in the Summer Olympics in Vancouver, one of the girls, she said, I've been imagining getting a medal since I'm 5 years old. So it's very easy to shift it. And you mentioned guided imagery, and I love guided imagery because it's taking the child through something, and I do have scripts in my book, but the nine tools sort of goes beyond it, so it's more interactive.
I want to talk about the nine tools of guided imagery, but first, I'd like to know, how did you personally discover the power of guided imagery?
I was working in the inner city in Los Angeles as a psychologist in the schools, and the kids were depressed, and it was a very dark place, and basically I was desperate because regular ways of working with the kids weren't weren't going to work. It wasn't going to touch them. I needed to find a place, something that would like touch their hearts, touch their souls. And I happened to be at a conference where there was some people from Paradise Unified School District talking about a study they did in their school district using guided imagery. And they found out the kids' academic scores went up and the bad behavioral referrals went down. And it clicked, because my background is in art and psychology, besides psychology, and it was perfect for me because I'm left-handed, right-brained, and it clicked with me. And so then I just explored everything that was out there. I work with a woman at UCLA, Mariel Fuller, who had been training residents in a form of imagery. There was German or Bulgarian scientist Hans Karl Lerner, who did guided affective imagery. He happened to be over in LA. I worked with him. I just read everything I could, and then I just started putting pieces together. And then over the years, the kids kind of taught me what worked with them and what didn't work. And one of the kids, which is very touching, one of the kids I work with, she tracked me down like 5-10 years later when she was in high school. I must have known her in fifth grade. And she said that whenever, she was the student body president at the time, and she says, whenever I'm on the stage talking to the auditorium, I think about an image we did, and that was climbing a mountain of success, standing on top of the mountain and feeling successful.
Nice.
And she kept it with her.
I wonder if you think that modern media, all of this passive consumption of TV, movies, and music might weaken our human ability to imagine things.
I do. I think we need a balance. I mean, that's part of my mission, is to create that balance, because there is so much. And the kids aren't, they're imagining what you're telling them to imagine. So I'm trying to get them to click into their own abilities and create their own. I mean, when Einstein created the theory of relativity, he imagined floating on a beam of light. And so I want to bring that back to the kids, because you're right. When they're doing the video games all the time, there are images coming at them, but they're not creating them so much. I tell the kids that as much as there is outside, as much stimulation, there's that much more inside when they close their eyes and go inside.
Now, let's talk about the 9 tools, because you've developed a program using 9 imagery tools. Why 9? How do they relate to each other?
Well, they sort of build on. The first one is the balloon breath, because that's the way in. So it's not necessarily an imagination tool, but it helps you go inside. It sets the stage. And then I go into finding a special place, because I want the kids to have a sacred sanctuary where they can do their inner work. It also works double duty, because just going to a peaceful place for them is like a respite from the stresses of life. So we can work it that way. And then when they're in their special place, then I have them call in their, for want of a better term, guides. So I have animal friends, which are protectors and often help them. And I have wizards and wise people, because with Harry Potter being so popular, wizards are easy for kids to relate to. There could be generic wizards, there could be specific wizards. And then from their inner guides, they get guidance, they get gifts. And so gifts are another tool. But gifts are not just imaginary gifts. They're also words or something that they're shown to help them. And then I move on to a little more esoteric, maybe because I love color, but using color to heal, and how kids could use color to heal themselves and to learn about their feelings, their emotions. And then I have them check in with their heart and their belly, because we know people that have heart transplants, it's anecdotal, meaning it's not all the time, but sometimes people who receive a donor heart start to crave something that they're the person who donated the heart, like some kind of ice cream or some kind of activity. So there's some evidence that there's like some kind of cellular memory transfer. And then there are gut feelings, where our intuition, when we think of intuition often, well, there are cells in the lining of the gut that are similar to some of the cells in the brain. So it's as if we have a belly brain and a heart brain. So I like the idea of connecting not only the mind, because the mind is wonderful, but connect it with the heart and the belly. You have a much richer response.
Right.
And then once we're talking to our heart and our belly, why not talk to the rest of our body? Because every part of our body has information. So we might talk to, I had one girl who was jealous of the new babies in her house, and her feelings of love were in her heart, but her feelings of hate were in her toes. So we had to talk to her toes and then see what could help compromise or balance. And then it was interesting, the first week her toes was filled with hate, but then it changed to sadness, which made really was a true feeling because she was jealous of them. And then I had her imagine sending love from her heart where the love feelings were to her toes. And they went all the way down her leg, but at her ankle, there was a gate. Couldn't get through. So we had to have a conversation with those feelings to find out what she needed to open the gate to let love all the way through. And what her toes told her was she needed more time with her mom, and they made a compromise that she could have more time with her mom even when the babies were around, like help her mom with the babies. And somehow knowing she could have more time with her mom opened that gate, and then she could let love flow.
Now, can these tools work for parents too? I mean, should we all have imaginary friends or relate to a guardian angel?
Yes. Tools are for grown-ups too. In fact, I had a grandma, I was speaking somewhere, and she says, I'm going to get myself a wizard. One of the kids had a time management wizard. I mean, wouldn't that be helpful to have your own personal time management wizard? And the wizard had a book that you opened up, you know, how to control time, and you open it up, and wherever you open, it gives you advice to help you. And what you're doing is you're really tapping into your imagination, your own wisdom that way. And you're not, you're going from the logical mind, which is great, to the more intuitive mind, which is so creative. And why not make use of it? And this is a fun way to make use of it.
Now, which tools would be most useful for a child caught in the middle of a nasty divorce and custody battle?
I'm thinking of all the kids that I know, unfortunately, that have been. In fact, I did my own research on the long-term effects of divorce, why some kids do well. You need the Bloom Breath. That's a basic tool. It's really good to have a respite. I had one girl, you know, to have a special place. I had one little girl, 7 years old. She listened to the CD I made about discovering your special place every single night for 4 years, just to find some peace because her parents were fighting. So I think those are really key. And then you can go on to the others.
What about kids who are fearful? What can these techniques do for that?
You know, you could use it so easily. I'm thinking about a little girl who was terrified of sleeping by herself, and she was like 11 at the time, and her parents were like really tired of her going into their room every night. So she imagined a white dragon, she called Valcor, kind of wrapping around her bed, protecting her. And then at the door, she put a tiger. And even though she was 11 and you think, gosh, it's just her imagination, it really helped her. And what she told me was that she knows the fear was from her imagination. So she had to go into the imagination realm to fix it.
Uh-huh.
So I thought that was beautiful.
That is beautiful. And what advice would you give to a parent whose child needs help building up his self-esteem?
Oh boy, you really want to start having them see how precious they are and being really positive with them. And I would definitely have those kids go to a beautiful special place and have an animal friend come in to give them a gift to remind them how special they are, or show them the good things that they can do. Because maybe a child can't say something nice about themselves. I'll often have kids, I'll ask them, can you tell me something that you like about yourself? One thing, and they can't. But if they have an animal friend come in...
I know a lot of adults that would fail that. So what about siblings that are constantly fighting? Is there any solution for that?
Yes, but you know that the kids who have siblings actually do better socially, but when they go to kindergarten, because they have a place to practice. Mm-hmm. And it's very beautiful to watch. And whenever I ask kids, would you rather have your brothers and sisters or be an only child, the kids that don't have siblings always want them.
Yeah.
And the kids that have them, sometimes they go back and forth. I mean, even if they're a pain, but they're great. It's great to practice with them because it's a great practice for life. So I'll even have the kids sort of create some kind of a love between them too. I'm thinking about these two little sisters, and the older one was really bugged by the younger one, and so she called in. She had called in an animal friend, and a little bluebird appears and whispers to her that when your sister really bugs you, don't stick around and punch her because you'll get in trouble. Go to your room and punch the pillow. And what she then had a red bird come, and she said that when she fought with her sister, that she felt all the sticky stuff, and the red bird picked off the sticky stuff from her. You know, like when you have an argument with someone, you don't really feel good. It's like you're picking up bad vibes. So her red bird picked off that sticky stuff. But she said, the sticky stuff I put on myself, I have to take that off.
Oh, wow.
And then when the sticky stuff was gone, then she could imagine sending love from her heart to her sister's heart. And she would send, say, pink love to her sister, and she would imagine her sister sending pink, purple love to her. Mm-hmm. So they kept that heart connection open.
Mm-hmm. Parenting today is hard, as your book points out, and as we've been discussing. What is your best advice for parents to help their kids succeed in life?
I would say trust their intuition and trust their heart. I mean, I've made a list of 10 things that kids want and need from their parents that kids have told me over the years. And of course, listening is on the top, and understanding. And as parents, we know how to fix things. We want to fix things for our kids. We don't want them to suffer. But sometimes kids just want us to really listen to them and don't speak and just understand and not fix it for them.
So when you say trust their intuition, you mean the parents should trust their intuition?
Their own intuition, the adult, yes, trust mm-hmm. themselves. Because I found a lot of parents, they go, I should have trusted myself. I knew something was wrong, and I didn't pay attention.
Boy, isn't that the truth? In life in general, how often do we have a gut feeling that is so right on, and we ignore it, looking for evidence to the contrary?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm trying to teach kids to trust and develop their intuition early on. Look, I'm from the streets of New York. So if I walk down the street and it doesn't feel right, I head in the other direction. You just develop that over time. So I want the kids to trust the good and the not so good and pay attention to it.
Charlotte, we're just about running out of time. Why don't you tell our listeners about your website so that they know how to find out more information about your book and your work in general?
Just go to imageryforkids.com. That's F-O-R in the center. And there's a plethora of articles, and you can go direct to Amazon if you like to purchase the book. And I have like 80 free gifts you could download, which is kind of fun to do when you're getting a book. Why not get more gifts? And lots of CDs and samples that they could listen to.
And what are these CDs about?
Oh, helping the kids achieve their inner peace. So we have CDs related to the book, mm-hmm. and then we have Discovering Your Special Place and Creating a Magical Garden and Healing Pond, which
was like guided meditations,
yes,
type things?
Yes, guided uh-huh. meditations. And for parents, too. There's one for parents, too.
Wow, fantastic.
The Cave of Great Wisdom.
A lot of resources, and that's at imageryforkids.com. Imageryforkids.com. Well, we have done it. We have run out of time. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
And for those who may have tuned in late, this is Paul O'Brien. And today on Pathways, we have been talking with Dr. Charlotte Resnick, author of the new book, The Power of Your Child's Imagination, How to Transform Stress and Anxiety into Joy and Success. I want to thank our listeners for tuning into this Pathways program, which is made possible in part by a grant from the Divination Foundation. Information at divination.com. That's divination.com. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and share with others, are freely available on the internet at kboo.fm or divination.com. This is your host, Paul O'Brien, reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways and its podcasts, the interview program dedicated to personal and cultural transformation. Until next time, here's wishing you a fresh start, full of learning, loving, healing, and happiness.